Hi, this is Terry Date. I produced and recorded the album Bad Motorfinger for Soundgarden. What you're going to be listening to is Chris, Kim, and Ben talking about the recording and writing of the album. Welcome to Amazon, side by side, for Bad Motorfinger's 25th anniversary.
You know, I've listened to this album a lot since last spring. And, you know, for a long time, when I think of, you know, I like everything we did, mm-hmm. but it's the stuff that often stands out for me is like Screaming Life and Super Unknown. Mm-hmm. They're distinct markers and milestones. But you always hear people referencing Bad Motorfinger and Super Unknown, partially because they're kind of cool titles, but also because they were successful records. Down the Upside's also a successful record. But there's something really cohesive about this. And as I started listening to it, I had that weird response you get like when you pick up something like Hotel California or Zeppelin II or Ramones' Rocket to Russia. You're like, that song's on this album too? And you hear the next song, it's like, wow, that's on this too?
Surprise yourself.
And I know, you know, by memory, the
you remember
the
being
tracks.
In that band?
But just like listening, and you know, Outshine starts after Rusty Cage, and he gets Slaves, and then Jesus Christ Post, like, holy crap. And then everything, every song that comes, sounds like, oh yeah, that's on this. It's just top to bottom pretty solid. I mean, the songs are distinct, but they're all very uniquely Soundgarden, even though they kind of approach different aspects of what it is to be us.
It's a team I wouldn't want to face in the playoffs.
That's a pretty menacing lineup.
My first memory of Rusty Cage and coming up with the guitar riff was kind of one of those songs where I was sort of still learning the guitar. I think I started playing after the band was formed, so I was kind of way behind. And so Bad Motorfinger as an album and as a writing period for me had a lot to do with advancing on it and just kind of figuring out what it can do. And that was, I think, the first song where I tried drop B because we were doing drop D stuff. And I don't know if we had gotten into open C yet, but I tuned down to B, tuned the E string down to B, and a lot of things just kind of started happening. And it enabled that riff, the main verse riff, to just be something that, where you could do this sort of slidey, fast-paced riff.
It created a pretty easy octave.
Yeah, exactly.
An easy, accessible octave. I think that was the first song we ever did in drop B.
Yeah.
I think we farted around with tunings, just jamming, but that was the first song.
And so that was the beginning of it. It reminded me of aspects of other things, but really it felt kind of uniquely Soundgarden to me. I always referred to it as Hillbilly Sabbath because it had it has like a big riff part in it that's kind of Sabbath-y, but the whole thing all put together has it definitely has this American feel. You know, that was kind of the beginning. That's what I remember of it.
What I love about that is it has this very unique arrangement. It's just like there's this main A riff, and then it goes this like sped up
shifts gears.
B part, and then just ends on this amazing quirky time signature heavy groove. And mm-hmm. I just love the way the song progresses like that from beginning to end, and it doesn't revisit the main head. It just kind of becomes something else and just kind of opens up like visually. It's sort of like this weird line that just kind of gets bigger and bigger and bigger and spreads out.
Now, I don't remember, but I think you and Terry went in, Chris, and you played pick bass on that. And that, the propensity for you to understand tone and everything was showing off there, because it's just like, that really helps kick it into the shifting gear like Kim was talking about, where it shifts up and it changes the mood, and it's really cool. Because I always had to want to play without a pick. And you're like, no, it needs that really aggressive attack to it right there.
Yeah, we had like we had a handful of songs where, because I couldn't really play with fingers, but if there was a bass part that needed a percussive thing, it sort of didn't work without it, but what, there's probably three or four songs in our history that had that. And that was kind of one moment and one part of a song.
But it really accentuates that shifting gear that Rusty Cage does have. It's that part of that song. Not right. That bass part, but that part of the song is like, whoa, you can feel it when we play it live too. The crowd just like, you know, breathes in and gets ready. It's really cool.
And it's fun to play.
Yeah. Still,
that song's always been fun.
It's one of the funnest ones to play.
It's such
the other thing,
cool and unique arrangement.
Yeah. The other thing that stands out to me about that song is that, for me, after every album is kind of mixed and mastered, there'll be a song mix-wise and sonically that I think is the best, and I think that one's the best. And it's probably just because of, you know, it's pretty simple. There's not a lot going on, but it just always sounded great sonically to me.